Yeah, I think that's totally it, right? Like we see it with our volunteers, we see it with our audience members. People cannot get enough cold snap, even if that means it's that marathon of the 9 days. And so by condensing, we're making things a little bit easier on the sleep cycle, a little bit easier on the immune system, and really leaning into folks being able to take advantage. And I think that this leveling up and this constant dedication to improvement and experimentation, which comes into play with every part of our festival, from the lineup to the poster, we're trying to do our best every day to make something that's really unique and also really reflects the audience that we've built here and the audience that we intend to continue to build here.
Another changing feature of Cold Snap, of course, the thing that changes absolutely every year is the lineup. Now, the lineup this year, it looks spectacular, and as is typical, I'm going through the lineup and I'm discovering new artists, which is part of the festival experience. That's what you want. But I'm also seeing a lot of familiar artists to me as someone involved in the college community campus radio area. I'm looking at Misha and the Spanx, Cat Clyde, Reckless Burning, Wax Mannequin, St. Arnaud, the Garys. What's going on here? Do you have someone in the college radio world involved with picking this stuff? Because I'm not researching quite as much as is typical.
It is funny you point out the college radio angle, as our artistic director, Fraser Hayes, our brave leader, has deep roots with the Seifer family. But I think as well, we're really invested in researching who's out there on the professional touring circuit in Canada, who's coming up with new and exciting things. When you're planning a festival of this size with like dozens of artists, the research piece is really important. And we're really blessed being a winter festival that we're able to take advantage of getting to know who's performing in the summer festival circuit, as well as attending conferences across Canada to get to know who's at these showcases, who's doing something new, and building those strong connections with the festival network across Canada, in particular Western Canada is really important to us. And I think you really see that in our lineup. And it's always been important to Cold Snap to present artists that maybe aren't that mainstream and that you don't have that immediate name recognition. We can tell folks like, hey, you can trust us to put on an amazing show. You're going to see like Juno nominated and Juno Award winning artists. You're going to see artists that are on the rise. They're going to be on track to be doing these incredible things with their careers down the line. There's so many names in Cold Snaps of years past that have gone on to be really big deals in the Canadian music scene and the global music scene. And I think folks can trust us to put on a high quality production and know that this is going to be where you encounter your next favorite artist.
One of those artists being the Garys out of Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, known for their doom wop surf rock sound. Guitar playing vocalist of the group, Erica Meyer, one of four siblings performing in the band, dropped us a line, and we picked her brain on the perceived emergence of the Winter Music Festival in Canada over the past several years.
In terms of a winter festival, and just for us as a band when we first started, and even still, I think primarily the focus is on summer festivals, and there sometimes feels like almost a lot of pressure to be filling up the whole summer with touring and things like that. And so it's really exciting to see that in Canada, maybe we're leaning into more of the lifestyle of being like, hey, yeah, we're really resilient people, and we experience winter for sometimes more than half of the year. And so it's really exciting to see how that's sort of evolved. And I've always kind of been a bit envious of Nordic countries where, and even Northern Canada, I think, does a really good job of it too, of embracing like winter lifestyles and just dressing for the elements and having fun anyways. And it's been really cool to see in Saskatoon, our hometown where we're from, there's a festival, and it's kind of evolved to a few other cities as well, but it's called Winteruption. And that's been really fun, as well as a couple other festivals in like Alberta and Winnipeg. And it's been really cool to see some of the strange places we've got to play. Like we got to play once on the frozen forks in Winnipeg in the winter. It's really unique, and I think winter can be a pretty mellow and dark time for a lot of people, and so it's really exciting to see embracing a bit more art in some of those colder months, and I hope it keeps evolving that way.
We bring you back to Catherine Benny at the Cold Snap Festival. Catherine, how do artists get to the point of getting to the level where they are now on your radar? Does the festival ever approach artists?
Ooh, it's a little bit of everything, you know, because we always have our artist application form open on our website, and that's a really amazing way for us to get to know not only regional artists, but as well as artists that maybe we haven't seen before. I think artists who get out there on even the Northern BC festival circuit, like I'm looking at you, Reckless Burning had a very busy summer. So you have that angle of things. And then I think another thing that we joke about is that we only hire like non-a-holes musician-wise, where when you're out there performing, when you're working with live event presenters on all scales, whether it's a mega festival or something huge in the Lower Mainland or maybe in Edmonton or Calgary, or, you know, something tiny like Peace Valley Folk Fest or other small festivals, when you're interacting on that, on those different scales, when you are nice to work with and you're creatively like bringing something new and exciting, that reputation ripples out and festival organizers hear about it and live events presenters hear about it and technical producers hear about it and communications managers hear about it. And I think that's something that's really cool about, in particular, the Canadian music scene and the Western Canadian music scene, is that there is that level of, like, not necessarily the cliche of, oh, it's all in who you know, but I think the way that you treat people matters. And that's something that I think is really cool.
It's good to know that as an artist, you actually do have the potential to build a rapport with your peers in the arts community, no matter what side of the stage they might be on.
Yes.
And it can build up over time. That's lovely to hear. So where can people find tickets to the Cold Snap Festival and perhaps grab the few remaining festival passes that are out there?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So please visit our website, www.coldsnapfestival.com. If you run into any issues with the box office, we do have the email addresses for our box office team listed there. They're awesome to work with and are happy to help you out. Yeah, we're really looking forward to seeing everyone in February. And yeah, just stay tuned for all of the cool stuff we have planned for y'all.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca. Or CFUR.ca.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Oh, Volunteering at CJSF 90.1 FM is a great experience and is easy to get started. So I'll tell you a little bit about it in the hope that you reach out. As this station is run almost entirely by volunteers, you have a variety of ways to get active at CJSF. Every department can use a little bit of help. Arts and entertainment. Well, you can write and produce reviews, conduct interviews of local musicians, the music library, acquiring, organizing, reviewing, and compiling charts. Public affairs. Interviewing groups, attending events, recording lectures. Public relations, postering, graphic design, and programming. You can host your own show or work on a collective. Production, audio editing, and PSA building. And once you feel comfortable, you can even volunteer to help the volunteers. So volunteer with us at CJSF 90.1. Email us at vol4cjsf@sfu.ca.
I'm in the south hallway of Simon Fraser University's academic quadrangle, where something fun has sprouted up. As a final wrap-up for their work in a course about fungal biology, BISC 328 students have prepared a wide array of presentations and interactive activities as part of the first annual Fungi Festival. Miranda Means is an instructor for the course.
This is the Fungi Festival, which is sort of the end-of-term celebration for BISC 328, which is Fungal Biology and Ecology. And so the students choose a topic on fungi and a format in which to share a love and appreciation of fungi with the world. And so we're hosting this public festival to help people appreciate fungi more than I think they do. So I think fungi are so important in ways that people don't fully understand ecologically, in terms of the materials that we use from them, pharmaceuticals, and I think it's not just the mushrooms, but also like the pathogens of plants, of people, of animals, all the sort of like different little hidden ways that fungi are important in the everyday world, but they're so hidden. And among like all the sort of areas of life, fungi are among the ones I think are least appreciated by people. So this kind of event will help to showcase fungi in ways that people hadn't considered them before. The students have done like a really fantastic job that we're having voting on the best overall, the most creative, and the best fungi info. And a dozen people so far have told me that they have the hardest time picking the best ones. We really stressed that these should be interactive displays. So we've got lots of games, we've got art projects, we've got voting by people. There's a wheel spinning. Some people brought cheeses, and there was a horde of children going through here earlier. There's just so much fun stuff. Part of the reason why we do things like the Fungi Festival, why I pick this sort of format, is because the students have learned so much, and like this is their chance to practice sort of being ambassadors and communicating what they've learned to a general audience and spreading and giving back to the community around them and sharing about these organisms. So that sort of skill building for them, it's like a culmination and a celebration for them, but it's also giving back. So I think it's sort of ticks a lot of boxes.
With displays ranging from board games and fungi art to foraging guides and a murder mystery where participants sleuth out which poisonous fungus is the culprit, students are eager to share what the course has taught them. My first stop is with Michael and Katie, who have prepared a guide for aspiring fungi foragers.
We have this little foraging setup here. The idea is we have some common edible mushrooms as well as their poisonous lookalikes. And the idea is you read some of the fact sheets here, and then you can try your hand at foraging for some of the edible ones. We have some hints on the back, and yeah, we also have some information on sustainable foraging practices and how to make a spore print, which is quite useful in mushroom ID. So I'm really passionate about mushrooms, and I just think they're really cool, the diversity of mushrooms and fungi, and they're tasty, they're pretty, they're visually stunning, so yeah.
There's a lot of stigma around mushroom hunting. There's a lot of fear out there. And so we wanted to make a resource that would be accessible for beginners to start learning one species that they can identify and go out into the woods and perhaps find, while also being aware of the safety that's required, because it's not like you can just go out and start eating random stuff you find in the forest. Like, you have to be a little bit conscientious when you do that. And so, yeah, that's why we made this.
Up next is Rowan and Emily's interactive fungi art station.
And our station's doing some interactive fungi art, so people come by and can add drawings and learn about different types of fungi and structures. We did a lot of local mushrooms, especially the ones that can be found around on campus, like sulfur tufts and fly agaric. So we hope that people see that there's more than just your typical guild mushroom, but also that they're abundant, that you can find them everywhere around here. I love mushrooms. They're really beautiful. I think they're really beautiful. They're also just so strange. Like, they're not animals and they're not plants. They're this strange in-between thing, and I think there's a lot that we can learn from kind of strange in-between things. Mushrooms, like she said, is a very interesting kingdom in itself, and so it also has wonderful applications in the real world, right? Like penicillin, bread making, all that other stuff, which I think we probably take for granted at most times, and so exploring that a little further.
The most common fungal food is, of course, the mushroom. But Melissa, Ian, and Ryan are showcasing a sometimes surprising smorgasbord of other fungus essential edibles.
We're basically highlighting food items that utilize different types of fungi in processing. So, for instance, we have sourdough, which uses yeast. We have brie, which also uses a fungi, and actually the outside is mycelium, which is part of a fungi body. We have Jarlsberg cheese, which uses bacteria and fungi, and the holes are actually made by bacteria. Salami, which uses fungi to slow down the drying process so we don't have rot. Blue cheese, and actually the blue color is the colored spores of the fungi. We have red wine. Different types of yeast are used to make different types of wine. We have kombucha, and then fruit, which we all know fungi destroys fruit.
I catch the course's other instructor, Zamir Punja, in the middle of a hotly contested round of Ethan, Justin, and Amanda's Guess Who style mushroom identification game.
Does yours have a cap?
No.
No cap. So no cap. No cap means what?
Get rid of all the caps.
Anything that has a cap, you put down.
This is a booth for the Fungi Festival where you play a Guess Who game to identify
cap, right?
Your fungus.
It's an open cap. That's a cap.
Okay. Okay, guys. All right.
Welcome to that one.
Last question. Is it a Western cauliflower?
It is!
No way! I'm good.
We were just hoping to have like a really interactive game. Yeah. It's kind of based on one of the labs we did in Miranda's class, and so we were like, that would be a fun way to play and get people involved with the identification. Honestly, we got more people playing than I thought we would.
Yeah.
It was, quite a lot of interest. I think the candy bribery and the stickers definitely helped, but...
I think so. But, I mean, yeah, we got a lot of people coming by today. A lot of kids, too, which was great.
Yeah. A lot of kids came in, yeah.
And, of course, I couldn't resist the allure of the spinning wheel at Jaina and Ethan's table. A temptation with dangerous results.
Both activities here are about mushroom picking. The wheel is that you spin, and whichever mushroom it lands on is whichever mushroom you happen to pick and eat. The cards with the pictures, when you flip them over, they tell you about the symptoms or edibility toxicity of the mushrooms. And then this game, each pair that has the same colored felt, there's one edible and one poisonous, and you try to determine which is which, just based on how they look.
And I decide to give it a spin.
Do I just flip it over?
No, you can flip it over and see what happens.
Right, yeah. So I picked psilocybe semilanciata.
Psilocybe semilanciata.
Liberty cap. So I found this mushroom amongst grassy fields, pastures, lawns, and grassy sides of tracks. And it is hallucinogenic.
It is.
All right, well, so after taking a medium dose, I'm going to experience psychic symptoms, which have an impact on my mood and how I see my environment.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Should I spin again?
Yeah, you didn't die, so you can.
Right. My first result was kind of fun, so I try again.
So you found these mushrooms under some birch and oak trees in chalky soil. You picked Satan's Bully, so it is poisonous when eaten raw. And after a few hours, you begin to experience stomach pain, vomiting, diarrhea. These symptoms persist for a few days, and you feel faint for weeks after eating it.
Ignoring the grumbling from my stomach, I move on to the next activity.
You pick two of the same color, and then just try to determine between them which one is edible and which is poisonous. Okay. After you've guessed, you can flip them over to see if you guess right or not.
I'm going to go with green. they both look...
They're pretty similar. It's difficult.
I would say that they're yellow in color. Their veins extend from the bottom of their cap down their stems, and the tops of their caps are kind of concave shaped.
Well, how did I do? Oh, no.
So the one that you chose to eat is unfortunately the jack-o'-lantern mushroom, and within 2 hours you experience severe gastrointestinal distress, vomiting, profuse sweating, chills, shivering, and irregular breathing.
I really should have just eaten the chanterelle.
Not a great result there either. I did learn a valuable lesson for all potential fungi foragers, though. Make sure you're sure.
While most of the exhibits at the Fungi Festival focused on variants of the noble mushroom, some were keen to highlight some of the lesser-known members of the fungal kingdom.
Hi, I am Den, or Aspen. I use they, them pronouns. I have a display of lichens. Sometimes people, when they think about fungi, they don't think about lichens. Lichens are a symbiotic relationship between algae, or a cyanobacteria, and also fungi. The fungi provide the structure in the lichen, and the cyanobacteria or the algae provide this photosynthesis. And they help each other in this relationship to thrive and grow. I think that sometimes, because they're so small, they're undermined. Sometimes also it's funny because we haven't, as humans, found a way to profit economically on them. And I think that says something very strongly about it. Lichens are important for example, for indigenous peoples. But in general, like, we don't appreciate them enough because we can't farm them. We can't harvest them much because they don't grow very fast. So, I don't know. I think they're, like, really special for me. Yeah.
There were lots of fungi fans in attendance to celebrate both the weird, widely misunderstood organisms and the work of the students who put together the displays.
Very impressive. I didn't really expect it to be like such a big thing. It's really cool how passionate people are about this.
Oh yeah, just like everyone stands, like they can tell they put a lot of effort into it, and like it's very creative.
Yeah.
Just the overall creativity of all the stands. Like some people have like games, other people like they've brought in like actual food items and are like explaining how fungi is related to that.
Not yet. I like the one that has the crochet mushrooms and the one that has the cheese. So cool.
Mushrooms are a big deal here in British Columbia, and fungi friends Basil and Kat showed up dressed to impress. Basil's sweater is crocheted with mushrooms, and Kat is wearing ceramic earrings shaped like the classic red and white polka-dotted fly agaric.
Basil actually made these earrings, but yeah.
And Catherine did not make this, but my other friend made this like embroidered shirt, which was very lovely of her. Mushrooms are just a really lovely thing in BC that we have a wide diversity of, and it's a great hobby to get into, just learning how to identify, learning to like appreciate your environment and the different like faces of the mushroom that you can find in wet versus dry seasons. Yeah.
What's the mushroom festival that you were just at?
Oh, on October 12th, I was at the Van Dusen Gardens Mycological Society Mushroom Festival. It happens every year. Great place, great people. Definitely recommend it if you're into mushrooms.
I couldn't go to that, but I can come to this. I'm mostly just friends with other mushroom people. And now, being friends with them, I go for walks, and now I just see mushrooms everywhere. So, yeah, it's huge. Because we have a lot of good mushrooms that grow here, yes?
Oh, 100%. I would say it's like a community that you might not see on the surface right away, but
like
much like a mushroom, underneath the ground, the network really extends much farther than you would expect. I would say mush farther than you expect.
I hate that. Yeah.
From the Mushroom Kingdom in Burnaby, British Columbia, this is Jesse Wensloff for CJSF 90.1 FM reporting. This piece is made possible by funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can find this story and more at frequencynews.ca.
CJSF is looking for new volunteers to come in and make radio. No experience is necessary. You can learn to DJ, edit sound, produce news, make posters, and host your own show. Come out to a weekly station orientation to get involved. Orientation times can be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
Time flies.
much to hold that one.